This podcast sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Join thousands of members who choose life through ethical and affordable healthcare. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com. Let's go to Mike now in the Quad Cities, Illinois area. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Patrick. How are you doing today?
I am loving life. Thank you.
I feel you that much. Hey, so this is kind of a controversial thing, and it's about the abortion thing you touched on a few moments ago. Now, when I say what I have to say here, don't take this as sort of, I don't know how else to put it, so I'm just going to kind of ask it here.
Okay.
What is your stance between religion and science, medicinal science?
What is my stance? I mean, like, how do I approach them?
How do you factor between the two? Like, what is something that is necessary between medical, like, emergency versus something that you feel is just God-willed?
Okay. Well, I approach science with a lot of gratitude because science is our way of learning about the physical realities around us. And that's part of God's revelation is the physical realm. So I'm very grateful to science and scientists, and I listen and I seek to follow it. With regard to revealed truth that comes to us outside of physical things, so divine revelation in the Bible, for example, or Jesus, I accept that as well. I seek to follow God's revelation to us, both in the physical as well as in the spiritual.
Okay, awesome. And I actually really humbly appreciate that answer. Not many people differentiate between the line of that. So my second question to follow up what I have to say is have you ever heard of Eisenmenger syndrome?
I don't know that I have. What is it?
Okay, so Eisenmenger syndrome is essentially an increased blood pressure in the right, I think the left side of the heart, that's the part of the heart that has blue blood. And it causes very, very serious, serious complications during pregnancy. And my point here is I had a family member who passed away with complications of a uterine. I can't think of the uterine issue she had right off the top of my head.
She was pregnant.
And Eisenmenger syndrome. And the doctor she had, who was also Catholic, advised her to abort because of a medical health care issue. As a matter of fact, she died because she refused to do so.
God bless her.
Basically,
she made the right
decision. Yes and no. She died because of an issue that could have saved her life. I mean,
yeah, but killing another person, especially an innocent person, is never the solution. You can never do something evil to achieve a good goal. Now, I grant you, and may she rest in peace, I'm sorry for your loss, but it would have been the wrong decision for her to kill the innocent life in order to save her own life. She did the heroic thing. She did the right thing.
I can't come to terms with that because, well, yes, that fetus was not evil. You know, they had done nothing wrong, and killing it would have been wrong, so to speak, but to lose her life over something that she could have lived for screams wrong to me. I mean, what?
You know, Jesus said, no greater love has any man than to lay down his life for a friend. So Jesus extolled what she did as a heroic thing. Jesus praised it. I'm sure that Jesus would not praise it if she said, well, my life is more important to me than this unborn innocent child, therefore I'm going to kill the child in order to save my own life. That's the opposite of what Jesus was extolling.
And I understand that, but in doing so, she also sacrificed her life and left behind two other children who needed her very, very much.
Right, but what is the option? I mean, on the one hand, you're appealing to how these children need her very, very much, but at the same time, you're advocating that she should have killed one of them? I don't understand that logic.
No, I'm not advocating that she should have. I'm advocating for the fact that it is health care. In the actual medicinal and definition sense, it is health care.
No, it's not. It's not health care to kill an innocent person. It's just not. And by the way, Mike, FYI, and you seem like a great guy, Mike. I'm not trying to get in a quarrel with you, but this is a really clear issue. You can never do something evil to achieve a good end. And it's always evil to intentionally take the life of an innocent human being. And that those are innocent human beings in the womb. We can call them fetuses because that's what the clinical term is for that stage of development. But they're still human beings. They're as much a human being as you and I are. And they have a right to life just like you and I do. And it's never, ever right to intentionally take the life of an innocent human being. So,
I'm not saying it is. Now, Before we get further on this,
well, then what are you saying, Mike? I want to make sure I know what you're saying, because maybe I don't. Maybe I've missed the point you're making. If you're not saying that, let me frame it, if I may. If you're not saying that it's okay to take the life of an innocent human being, then what are you saying?
What I'm saying is, there are how many different instances in the Bible itself that God has willed someone to kill another? Like Cain and Abel, for example.
Mike, God punished Cain for killing Abel. What Abel did was wrong. He murdered his brother, and God punished him for it. He didn't will him to kill his brother. No. Now, there are other instances where you could point to God said, go into that city and destroy it. I mean, there are other legitimate examples, but Cain and Abel is not one of them.
You're right. That was probably a misrepresentation there. But my point is that there are other instances in the Bible where it's happened under God-willed circumstances. Now, I'm not trying to ream you. I'm only doing this as sort of more of an informative sense in myself to kind of see where other people stand on this issue here.
I'm not reamable, by the way, Mike, so no worries on that score. But what is it that makes you think
that this is... I don't mean to disrespect. You're very intelligent, and I appreciate you.
Well, thank you. It's kind of you.
But I'm sorry.
I guess what I'd like to do is share with you from a medical professional perspective, and I'm not one. I assume you're probably not a doctor also, but I know...
No, but I've practiced.
You practice medicine?
Yes.
Okay, but not as a physician. I'm just trying to get clarity.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I'm actually still in training.
Okay,
so that's kind of where I'm questioning my... not questioning, but seeking clarity between the line of religious practice and medicinal practice.
Okay. I hear you. I understand where you're coming from. Let me share with you a brief commentary on this topic by a physician by the name of Anthony Levitino. He'll give a little bit of his credentials in a moment, but he's talking directly about the question of, is it ever medically necessary to abort the baby to save the life of the mother, which is really the heart of what you and I are talking about, right?
So, exactly, yes, 100%.
Okay, so he'll tell you, you know, he performed, you know, 10,000 deliveries. He also was an abortion doctor for many years, OBGYN. He'll tell you all that, but listen to what he had to say when he was asked the same question, okay? I think you'll find it very interesting. So here's Dr. Anthony Levitino, and I'll come back to you, Mike, when he's done talking.
We hear all the time how abortion, including especially late-term abortion, is necessary to save women's lives. Nothing could be further from the truth. I spent 9 years working at a tertiary medical center. I mean, there are only certain hospitals in the country that are designated to take care of the really, really high-risk pregnancies. You don't want to duplicate the effort. It's expensive. So these hospitals get referrals from the surrounding area. And Albany Medical Center in Albany, New York, where I worked, was one of them. I was faculty at the hospital for 9 years. And I saw hundreds of cases of really severe pregnancy complications, cancers, heart disease, intractable diabetes out of control, toxemia of pregnancy out of control. And I saved, in those 9 years, I saved hundreds of women from life-threatening pregnancies. And I did that by delivering them, by ending their pregnancy by delivery, either induction of labor or cesarean section.
Delivering the baby.
And I always tell people, in all of those years, the number of babies that I was obligated to deliberately kill in the process was zero, none. And I'll give you an example. The key point about late-term abortion that so many people miss is that it takes days to prepare the cervix. This is not a natural situation by any stretch. If you're going to dilate a cervix sufficiently, that starts off essentially as a pinpoint, large enough to dismember or tear apart a baby this big, that cervix has to be dilated, and that can take anywhere from 24 to 72 hours. And especially when you're talking about later-term pregnancies. Most life-threatening situations, the vast, vast majority of life-threatening situations in pregnancy are not going to arise until 24, 25, 26 weeks of pregnancy and higher. And when you're talking about that, you're talking about abortion procedures that take 2 and 3 days to prepare the cervix. And I'll give you a classic example. This is a real case. A lady came to the hospital at 27 weeks of pregnancy with severe toxemia. Her blood pressure, you know, a normal blood pressure is about 120 over 80. Her blood pressure was 220 over 160. Okay, this lady would literally be minutes or hours away from a stroke. What do you do in a situation like that? We stabilized her, brought her back, did a cesarean section, had her delivered within an hour of arriving at the hospital. She and her baby did just fine.
Okay. Now, thank you, Cyrus. I appreciate that. I hope we didn't lose our caller. I don't see him.
He's back on two.
Oh, back on two. Great. Okay, thank you. Mike, I thought I had lost you. So thank
you. Yeah,
really.
I thought I lost you guys too. Nope.
So I just want to, that's food for thought. What do you think about his testimony on that?
No, I absolutely agree with him. In no way, shape, or form do I agree with late-term abortion in any way, period. My question was actually not about late-term. It was strictly early-term. My point is that she suffered that entire pregnancy up until birth to lose both herself and the child. That was my point. In no way, shape, or form do I ever agree with late-term abortion. That is strictly murder. There's no other way to put that. So in that regard, I totally 100% agree with Levitino. And it's funny because I've actually heard that before. So it was actually a good refresher to listen to it once again.
So where do you draw the line? This is a very interesting point you're making here. If it's murder in late-term abortion, where do you draw the line before which it's not murder? And why is it not murder before that point, but it is murder after that point?
See, this is where it gets to be the controversial part. Now, I'm a man, a purveyor of knowledge, so to speak. I like to seek information, knowledge from every facet available to me in any way, shape, or form. Okay. So this is not necessarily my view. Okay, so this is another one. So, sorry, I'm a little stuck here at the moment. Okay, so this is a hard one to ask because this doesn't necessarily reflect how I feel. As a matter of fact, this whole conversation doesn't reflect how I feel. More so as I'm just garnering to seek information.
Mm-hmm.
So
fair enough.
Do you know at what stage the child becomes sentient?
Well, sentient can mean a few different things. Able to feel pain.
I don't mean sentient in the sentient. I mean sentient in the form of brain development, consciousness.
Very early. Well, consciousness, it's hard to say. I don't know if there's a way. I mean, they could determine when are brain waves detectable? When is a brain sufficiently formed to be detectable? Things like that. I mean, if that's what you're referring to. I know that it's early in the process of gestation.
Yeah, it's early, but it's not as early as 6 weeks, which is...
Well, here's my question, because we could discuss the details of medical science, and I'm not a medically trained person, so I don't have that knowledge. But I'd rather than talk about what's not your point of view, I'd like to talk about what your point of view actually is. Find the more intriguing.
My issue here is... A lot of people don't see it as, I'm a debater. I'm somebody who just likes to seek knowledge. So, like I said, this isn't my point of view. It's something that I'm just asking.
Yeah.
And you seem like the great kind of person to ask.
Well, thank you. I think I would answer that question, which you were just presenting, like, well, what is that before our instruments are capable of detecting brain waves, as an example? There may be other criteria that you would apply, but... If before a certain number of weeks we can't detect that because in the zygote phase or even just down to the single cell phase at the moment of fertilization, my answer is that that is what a human being looks like at that stage of development. So at the moment of fertilization, when the sperm and the egg unite, that's what a human being looks like at that stage of development. And then you just push the time out further and further at 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 5 weeks, 20 weeks. This is what a human being looks like. Now, sentience is one metric to measure. It's certainly not the only one. And also, I would argue that it's not a criterion for determining whether or not that's a human life. It's a criterion for determining what phase of development is that human life at. That's valid. But it doesn't get to the heart of whether or not that's a human being. Because if it's not a human being before X number of weeks where the brain waves are detectable, then what is it? What is that? And my view, to be consistent, and I'll throw it back to you, Mike, but my view is that from the moment of conception, the very first moment, that is a human being, an innocent human being who has a right to life through all stages of development. So that's where I come from this, you know, that's the angle that I'm coming at this from. And I'll give you the last word. I do have to take a break in a moment, but I'll let you
give me
any concluding thoughts.
And I really appreciate you going through this with me because, you know, like I'm not trying to cause issues. You know, I'm just, this was brought up in class. Mm-hmm. And it was just something that I wanted to see what you had to say, because the issue and point and factor is there's a certain stage in which basically I'll say 50% of the class stated that it wasn't a human being up until a certain point of brain development, and the other class stated it was. Now, their garnering or their information that they spoke is that before it becomes a human being, it's technically, and by all medical definitions, it does ring correct with the term, and I don't like saying it like this, but they deemed it a parasite first, so because it can't survive without a host. I mean, you remove the fetus, and I'm only using that in clinical term, it can't survive. Now, after a certain point in time, you let the child develop long enough, even at premature, it can survive, albeit with medical technology, but it can still survive. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where it came up to this, is you know, that's a really weird thing to, it's kind of gross to say.
Right. But here's something that should be part of that conversation, and I'll have to leave in just a minute. Nonetheless, you could extend that metaphor of parasite and host to a newborn baby. The newborn baby, even though he's outside of his mother's body, he's dependent upon her for his very life, and he can't survive without her. Now, it's true, of course, that somebody else could take that baby and feed him, but the fact is he's still as much of a parasite, quote unquote, if we want to use that ugly terminology, outside of the womb as he is inside the womb. He's still dependent for everything upon another person, and typically it would be the mother. So I don't think, it's not that I don't think. I know that the parasite argument, although it might seem superficially persuasive, it's not really persuasive at all, because it doesn't change the fact that you're still dealing with a human being, whether outside of the womb or inside the womb. This has been a really good conversation, Mike. Really good. I'm glad you called. I hope you'll call me again. I'd love to talk to you again.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to you. This was the first time, and as a matter of fact, real quick, I actually only recently found your show just this week. So I'm glad you had the chance to talk to me, and speaking to you was a wonderful pleasure, and I'm humbled and blessed at the same time.
Thank you, Mike. I feel the same. I'll talk to you again soon. I'll be right back.
For more of The Patrick Madrid Show, visit relevantradio.com/Patrick.